RICO News Report. I'm your host, David Narum of Greenway Partners. Today, I'm talking with Larry Goldberg, the event coordinator for the upcoming Building Green Communities Conference, Adaptation, Creating a Resilient Future, put on by Planet Green and Humboldt State University. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine today.
Let's just start out right away, maybe a little brief history of the conference, where the idea came from, what it's all about.
Okay, Planet Green has been doing these events for 6 years now. This is the sixth annual conference. Planet Green is an environmental nonprofit organization involved with public education and awareness building about green technology, green lifestyle, green business, this type of thing. We do green business certifications, we do luncheons and public presentations, seminars, workshops, this type of thing. But we're really known for our annual conference, which has traditionally been in the spring, usually in April, and it's in the form of a large trade show where we get local vendors who sell what we consider green products and green services in this area. Well, this year we decided to step it up a couple notches. We've had speakers in the past, but they've typically been kind of, I would say, C-class or D-class speakers, folks that we can get from around the area, but not necessarily world-class speakers. And this year we decided to really ramp it up, and we're bringing in some really top names. And we're addressing an issue that we feel is really critical. We've been looking at building green communities, which is really our mission. And as part of that, this year we're looking at the topic of adaptation, creating a resilient future. And the idea of resiliency is talking about how there are many threats on the horizon. We are looking at climate change. We're talking about a topic called peak oil. There's an issue about economic instability that we're all going through right now with the economic recession and, you know, the looming financial crisis in Europe and what have you. So we're trying to build resilient communities, and that really means becoming more localized, becoming more locally self-reliant. So to that extent, we're bringing in some really top-name talent. We have Bill McKibben who's going to be on a webcast with us. Bill McKibben is a world-renowned author, environmental policy advocate, speaker, and he's the founder of 350.org. He's written a number of books, the most recent of which was called Earth. That's E-A-A-R-T-H, talking about living on a new planet after climate change. We also have Rob Hopkins, who is the founder of a movement called the Transition Town Movement. He is going to be webcasting to us from England. He lives in England, and he'll be talking about the Transition Town Movement, which is just blossoming all over the world today. Transition towns really developing post-peak oil process, trying to really work towards a world after oil and start thinking about how are we going to get our food and transportation and run our communities without readily available cheap oil. And then we also have Richard Heinberg as our keynote speaker. Richard Heinberg is coming out of the Santa Rosa area. He's an American journalist and educator. He's written extensively about energy, economic, and ecological issues. And he's most famous for talking about oil depletion. He is a senior fellow at the Post Carbon Institute, and he's authored over 10 books, and the most recent of which is called The End of Growth. And then in addition to these headliners, we also have many local leading experts talking about resiliency and community self-reliance. So we'll be talking about the Renewable Energy Secure Communities, which is a plan to become more energy self-reliant being developed by the Schatz Energy Research Lab in Arcata. We have a woman coming, Kirsten Schwinn, from the Bay Area. She runs an organization called Bay Localized that they authored a book that we're going to be giving away with the conference called the Community Resilience Toolkit, which is a book that helps grassroots organizing to build community resilience.
I want to talk a little bit about the Resilience Toolkit. I think one of the things that you're looking through your material for the conference that you're focusing on Planet Green this year is to make this not a conference where it's a come and sit and listen and walk away without any sort of takeaway. You're trying to build capacity among the people that are participating in this to take on some of the responsibilities of making these transitions and adaptations themselves. So let's talk about the toolkit, actually. I know that this is something developed by Bay Localized, but it's you're not just turning it over in the exact same way, right? You've adapted it, so to speak.
That's correct. We wanted to build some kind of workbook. Our focus is taking action. And the idea of this event is to go away with the kinds of tools and information needed to start building resilient communities in our own communities. And to do that, there is this toolkit which looked at how do you develop a resiliency plan. And that includes how do you evaluate the resources available in your community, how do you get ready to do resiliency planning, and how do you design your plan. We've taken the plan and we've edited it and we've made it more globalized plan. And we are now offering a much more globalized worldview that how would this work in any community? So we want to look at water resources. Where do you get your water and who controls it and how much access and how safe is it? These are some issues. Where does your food come from? Where does your energy come from? These are all issues that every community in the world has to deal with. And this toolkit is now globalized to be able to say, with this information, we can start developing our own resiliency plan. We're going to take this plan, and it's going to be put on a 2 gigabyte USB thumb drive. And everyone that attends a conference gets one of these thumb drives. And it has not just the book on it, but it has videos, and it has resources and documents and PDFs and all kinds of working documents that you could use to be able to build your resiliency plan. So there are 2 gigabytes worth of information that we're giving everybody at the door to take home with them. And from that, we expect to see some plans come forward that we'd like to follow up on 6 months and a year from now to be able to look back and say, how are we doing on our resiliency planning?
So in effect, you're building a network of communities that can communicate with each other, talk to each other, share lessons learned, that sort of thing.
Exactly. In fact, what we're really talking about here, and we're offering this at the conference, is kind of a best practices guide. One of the things we're doing is we've offered some communities who have been at it for a while, the community of Willits, just south of us, they've been at it over 6 years doing this localization planning. And they are working actively on developing working localization plans. They're going to give a report on the process that they've been through and what they learned and what worked and what didn't work and how they would do things differently. The idea being, let's learn from each other, find out what works, find out what doesn't work. Each community has its own unique features. How do we take the best of what everyone's doing and apply it in our own community? We are really networking here with activists around this region. We're advertising and promoting this conference from Santa Rosa all the way up to Eugene, Oregon. We'd like to see people from the entire bioregion share their information. It's taking place on July 19th and 20th. It starts in the evening of Thursday, July 19th, with some videos. We have a number of videos that are kind of setting the stage for what the issues are. We have a number of videos by Jared Diamond, who's famous for his Guns, Germs, and Steel, and a book, Collapse. We have Lester Brown, who is from the World Watch Institute, and we have several videos that set the stage. And then it's all day Friday, the 20th of July. And that will be the full conference where we start with a introduction, some major keynote, and we go through the day, and then there's another keynote at night. But we have a series of tracks on different various topics, everything from alternate transportation, the native adaptation wisdom, transition towns, community resilience, sea level impact. So there's a whole list of topics that we'll be addressing, and that will all be covered on Friday. And then on Saturday, the 21st, we're going to have our green trade show, that's Building Green Communities trade show and expo, and tied to that will be some sustainability tours. And these tours are designed to show off what people are doing in the community that's working. So we're actually going to be showing permaculture examples of community permaculture work that's going on. We're going to show a number of working community CSA farms, so that people can see what, you know, semi-urban farming is like. We have another tour of native adaptation wisdom going up to the Klamath River and town of Klamath and visiting the Yurok Reservation and actually seeing examples of canoe building, net making, eel basket weaving, various indigenous skills that were used in adaptation over thousands of years by the local indigenous population. So that we're having local tribal members demonstrate some of these skills. So we have a very exciting program planned, and there's something in there for everybody.
Yeah, I remember listening to William McDonough, the architect who is famous for his cradle-to-cradle concept, I remember him talking about community sustainability, and he was sort of he likened it to becoming indigenous again. You know, we have to learn how to do that, because these cultures that have lived here for thousands of years, you know, they knew how to get by with what the local area gave them. And I don't think what the localization movement is saying, you know, completely localizing everything, but, you know, to relearn some of those skills and understanding what you have locally, you know, whether it's renewable energy or your food resource or whatever, I think is, you know, it just makes sense no matter what whether you're in a crisis mode or just kind of in a go along mode.
Right. And I have an interesting statistic to share, because this addresses one of the critical issues we're looking at, and that has to do with food. In the 1800s, when this area was first settled, it was 100% self-reliant on food. Now, they didn't have exotic foods up here. They probably didn't have oranges, and they may not have had coffee or some other crops that, you know, you can't grow here. But they were essentially self-reliant for virtually all of their food for quite a while, probably for, you know, 60, 70 years, this area was self-reliant. Well, at a recent event with a prosperity group that meets here talking about specialty foods and agriculture, I asked a question: how much of the food that's consumed locally is produced locally? And you know what the answer is? Less than 10%. Hmm. About 8% of our food that we consume locally is actually grown here. We need to change that. Even if we just increase it to 15% or 20%, that number has to come up, because we cannot be dependent for 90% of our food from the outside world. We need to be much more self-reliant, because the kinds of changes coming in the not-too-distant future, both from climate change, increasing oil prices, and maybe economic instability, we're not going to be able to afford food from out of the area if we can't produce our own. So this is the kind of thing we're going to be looking at.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be going up in price as the cost of transporting it goes up.
Exactly. And the thing that people don't understand is, you know, everyone says, well, we have plenty of oil. Yeah, we have plenty of oil. It's just not cheap anymore.
Right.
We've run out of the cheap stuff. Now it's just going to get more and more expensive. So the question is, how much are you willing to pay for that, you know, apple you buy, or that corn, or whatever it is that you're buying at the store? I mean, I remember when corn was a dozen ears for a dollar. You're lucky if you could find two ears for a dollar now, and pretty soon they'll be a buck each. Well, at a dollar each, how much corn can you buy for a family? Not much.
Right. So, Larry, let's switch gears just a little bit. I want to talk about one of your speakers, Richard Heinberg.
Yes.
Senior fellow from the Post Carbon Institute. Now, he has a new message. Can you talk about what the new message of Richard Heinberg is?
Sure. One of the problems in this movement in general is that oftentimes it's felt that their message is too gloomy. That, you know, it's all gloom and doom, that, you know, the end is coming, there's nothing we can do about it, let's kill ourselves now. And frankly, that's not the message. That's not what we're trying to say. What we're saying is we have to prepare for changes ahead. Well, Mr. Heinberg has adjusted his message to that same thing. His last book was called The End of Growth, but what he's really talking about today is moving beyond growth. One of the major principles of our civilization today is we have to grow. Well, one of the limiting principles of growth is you got to have the resources to grow, and that includes finite resources like the planet Earth. If you run out of critical materials, whether it's coal or oil or copper or, you know, whatever, water, all of those are limited. They're not infinite, and you can't have unlimited growth in a finite world. Well, the idea is we need to come up with a new sustainability standard. And it can be a very rich life, but it will not include all of the consumption that we're used to. The consumption patterns that we've developed as a society are relatively new. We've only become this kind of consumer society in the last 50 years. We weren't these kind of consumers 80 years ago. People didn't have the money and the resources weren't available. We're going to have to go back to those kind of times again, and that means that we have to rethink the way we live. What Mr. Heinberg's talking about is life after growth.
Right.
How do we change the way we live?
It's not as if people in the 1800s didn't have fulfilling lives or, you know, enjoyed themselves, or it wasn't possible without all of the material amenities that we have.
Sure. And I mean, the point is, if you got, you know, a new pair of pants for your birthday or for Christmas, that was a big deal. You didn't need to have 20 pairs of pants. you could get by with one, and people wore them out until they were completely gone. The average lifespan of most consumer goods today is less than a year. I mean, the trouble is most things that are purchased today are literally disposed of in under a year and sometimes under 6 months. So that kind of disposable society is simply not going to be possible in the not-too-distant future. And I'm not talking about 100 years from now. I'm talking about 20, 30, 40 years from now. Within many of our lifetimes, and certainly within our children's lifetime, we're not going to have a disposable society because we simply can't afford it.
Yeah. I think when you're talking about Richard Heinberg's new message, the idea that it's not all doom and gloom, I think that's an important part of this. And from my research into localization and resilient communities, I mean, these are ideas that stand on their own. They have merit outside of some of these other issues that you're talking about regarding climate change and peak oil. A resilient community is one that is, you know, thriving, that has a strong private sector, entrepreneurial mindset.
And also, it's also more spiritual. I mean, there are spiritual rewards that we've lost track of. I mean, just the idea of having family and friends and community and having kind of shared values, these are something that we've kind of lost track of in our electronic society today. We're kind of getting back to it with some social networking, but the idea of developing spiritual bonds, that could be equally rewarding to just getting material goods.
Yeah, I think we have probably replaced a lot of the sort of contentment or joy we get from the spiritual side of our lives with the material, or we've tried to, at least, not successfully, possibly.
The trouble is it's an empty promise. You know, and I think we're all guilty of it. You really want that book, or you really want that iPod, or you really want that computer, or whatever it is that you want, and you get it, and then within a matter of, you know, days or weeks, you're tired of it. And so that endorphin rush of getting something new doesn't last very long, and you have to do it again and again and again to keep that feeling. Well, eventually, we just can't afford it. It's just the planet can't afford it. If everyone in China and everyone in India wants to have the lifestyle that we have today, we're going to need four planet Earths. We don't have four planet Earths. We only have one planet, and it's supporting 7 billion people now and growing. We can't support 7 billion people and have the kind of lifestyles that we've developed.
Larry, let's talk a little bit about the conference. You're working with HSU, but it's also set in Arcata and the region, and this adaptation is not simply at the local policy level. I'm reading about the California State Adaptation Policy, or at least it's a beta policy they're putting out for piloting, I think, is what's happening now.
Yes, that's exactly correct.
Are you working at all with this initiative in
yes,
the conference?
Yes, we plan to feature this. This is a relatively new thing. In fact, we just learned of it ourselves very recently. California is developing a climate change adaptation policy. And the people who are writing the guide on this work out of Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. They develop a policy guide. It's actually available for download online. And it is the beginning of adaptation policy planning. And they've looked for a city or a number of cities to work as early adopters. And the city of Arcata stepped up to the plate and said they want to do it. So we're going to feature one of the authors of this policy guide to speak at our event and somebody from the city of Arcata talking about Arcata's plan. And we're going to look at what individual cities are beginning to do now to talk about adaptation, specifically about climate change. And we're going to be looking at issues of sea level rise, droughts and water factors, forestry issues, and other related issues as pertain to the climate change. So that we're going to have those people here, and we're very excited about the fact that Arcata is going to be one of the test cases for the state.
All right. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the details regarding the sustainability tour. I'd like to give people some idea. Now, are these tours, these are on the same day as the trade show, right?
Yes, that's correct.
On Saturday the 21st.
The sustainability tour, which is local, is going to one up the climate. Both include lunch, and they both include bus transportation and everything else that goes with it. And each tour has a guide that will be describing what you're seeing. On each tour, there's going to be a number of different stops along the way where you're going to be looking at examples of sustainability practices, one in the form of permaculture and the other in the form of native adaptation strategies. So in both cases, it should be very interesting tours.
So you have Arcata Wastewater Treatment Facility, the Campus Center for Appropriate Technology.
At this point, point, they have a number of other farms that they want to go to, so they're thinking people might go see the wastewater facility on their own, but they're going to see the Potawatomi Health Center. They have a permaculture garden there and a 100-kilowatt photovoltaic system. They're going to visit the CCAT house on campus. That's the Campus Center for Appropriate Technology, and see some appropriate technology living features in this house. They're going to go to a couple of community farms in the Arcata area. So they have a pretty complete tour planned, and it's going to go from roughly 10:30 in the morning till about 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon.
Wow, that sounds great.
So there's a full 5 hours of visiting different features within that plan. And then the other one is going up to Klamath, and that will be a bus tour to Klamath, and they're going to see traditional plank house, how the native peoples lived previously, a dance pit where they do their religious ceremonies. You're going to see people will probably be fishing. They're going to be fishing on the river, and you're going to see traditional gill netting techniques and how they have traditionally done gill netting for thousands of years and how that works. They're going to talk about how they made the original gill nets out of iris fibers from iris plants. They'll talk about how they did that. They're going to demonstrate eel basket weaving for how they capture eels. And they're going to probably make some acorn soup or something like that and do a traditional salmon barbecue so that they cook the salmon in a pit. And it's something you have to experience. It's a wonderful experience. So you're going to have a salmon lunch combined with all of these tour features. It's going to be a wonderful tour to attend.
Yeah, that does sound very good. So another detail, I was reading through your material, and I confess to not knowing about the concept of slow money, that you have a speaker, Marco Vangelisti.
Yes.
I mean, I've heard the term, but I haven't spent much time looking into it. What is slow money?
Well, we're going to have not just Marco talking. We also have somebody from the Willis Economic Localization talking at the same time. We're talking about localizing investment. It's not enough that you localize food and localize our energy and look at localizing other types of resource issues. We need to localize our economies. And as part of localizing economies, we're starting to look at how much money in our communities are invested in Wall Street and invested in areas that have nothing to do with our communities, simply to be investments. Well, we'd like to challenge that idea and try to bring some of that money back into the communities to create new jobs. And the idea of slow money is most people don't expect a fast return on their money. They're not in it for a year or two. Many people aren't. This is their retirement savings. They're in it for 10, 15, 20 years. They are not that interested in getting the maximum yield for their money, even though that's what Wall Street tends to sell us. What people are interested in is seeing that their money is being used effectively to help build and sustain community. So we're trying to create some vehicles for investing money with a lower return on investment, but it's much more sound. I mean, wouldn't you rather be invested in a solar energy system up on your neighbor's roof, and you know and you see your investment literally every day you drive by it, and your neighbor and everyone else in the community are paying for these on a regular basis? It's a much more secure investment. It may not have the same rate of return that you'd get on Wall Street, but it's a lot safer. And the idea here is to create local investment tools to start localizing our own economies. So this could create new jobs. This will bring investment opportunities for the region. And we want to encourage everyone that's involved in any form of investing, whether it's an IRA or a stock portfolio or people who do angel investments, anyone that invests any money at any time should be looking at a portion of their money being invested locally. We want to create new vehicles for doing that. Marco will be talking about that at the event.
Okay, yeah, I know that for many young startups, young businesses that want to try to get a foothold, especially in rural areas like we have here in Humboldt County, that the investment or the startup capital is a critical need. And what I have heard is the term locavestment. That whole movement is trying to figure out ways to provide that kind of funding for these small businesses. One thing I want to ask you before we need to get conference details. I want to make sure that we make sure people know how to
Okay.
buy tickets.
The conference will be held at Humboldt State University on the 19th and 20th of July. The trade show and the tours will be at the Arcata Community Center the next day, July 21st. All the details for everything are on our website. That's www.adaptationconference.org. So adaptationconference.org, all the information is there. We're also on Facebook, and we're also on Brown Paper Tickets. So you can find us and our information in several different places. There will be mailings going out to many organizations. You'll see it by various different resources. So you should find out about our conference. Go to our website. Any information you need is all there. If anyone has any questions and want to ask me directly, my number is 707-845-7272. And again, I'm Larry Goldberg. I'm glad to answer any questions anyone might have. And if you're a green business and you may want to exhibit at our event, give us a call as well.
Well, Larry, I just want to say that my business partner, Kurt Cahoon, and I at Greenway Partners have been exploring on our EcoNews reports the concept of and role of innovation in helping us create a more sustainable future. And I think it's important, following Richard Heinberg, to keep in mind that, you know, what we have here in this sort of age of the death of the current economic system and how it's obviously not working, certainly not working for everybody, is really an opportunity or multiple opportunities to create new thriving businesses, to innovate, to be creative, to explore new ways to create economic development for small communities, for regions, and for the nation and the world, really. And I have children who come home from environmental science classes, and they sort of moan and groan. But I think it's important to remember that we are a creative species, an adaptable species. And I think that's a message here.
Yes, absolutely. And the whole idea here of adaptation is taken from Darwin. It's not the strongest that survive. It's not the smartest that survive. It's the ones who are best adaptable to change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're really talking about, is we need to adapt as a species for the big changes that we have ahead. And if we don't adapt, we're going to die. So we need to adapt. It's essential. And to tell you the truth, it's not that painful. I think if we do it with a planning horizon, we can do it so everybody can benefit. If you wait for everything to run out and you have a crisis, then you're going to have a different kind of problem on your hands, and we're trying to avoid that.
Yeah, you want to be able to have sort of a foresight approach to it, that you can predict possible scenarios, way things are going, and then work to plan toward those.
Exactly. And what we're going to be doing in this conference is developing some of those scenarios, looking at our options, and helping to develop some best practices for how do we address them now. The transition movement is a great example of that. These are communities that are voluntarily becoming less dependent on oil, less dependent on outside food sources, trying to become more self-reliant. It makes sense economically. It makes sense practically. We should just get on it right now. Let's not wait. Get it over, move on, and then we're ready for whatever may come.
Great. So thank you very much, Larry. Do you have any last thoughts?
No, I hope to see everybody at the conference. One thing I should mention at the conference, we have a lot of opportunities for networking. We're going to have rooms available and spaces and times for people to meet each other and talk. Many of our participants will be even better than the speakers who are speaking. So I encourage you to attend and meet other people, talk with them, start some networks, start some alliances, and see if some collaborations might come out of it.
And if you can't attend...
Oh, it's also available on a webcast.
That's
right. We do provide a webcast, and we'll webcast it to the world. All the information is on our website, adaptationconference.org.
Great. Well, it sounds like you are doing an excellent job of putting this conference together, and I'm really looking forward to it. And thanks for spending time with us this afternoon.
I think it'll be exciting. I'm looking forward to everybody coming. Please attend.
Okay. Thanks, Larry.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye now.
You've been listening to the EcoNews Report. I'm your host, David Narum from Greenway Partners. Today, we've been talking with Larry Goldberg of Planet Green about the upcoming Building Green Communities Conference, Adaptation, Creating a Resilient Future, to be held Thursday, July 19th, Friday, July 20th, and Saturday, July 21st. Go to adaptationconference.org for more information. Thank you.
The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, and coordinated by the North Coast Environmental Center. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the Public Affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air, and as well go to yournec.org, the website of the North Coast Environmental Center. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 707-826-6089. Many, many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU for the Eco News Report.